Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gigax, and I am here with David Grosskopf out of Branch 3, Buffalo. David, say hello.
Hello. How are you, Alan?
All right. I am doing well. I'm off today, which sure beats putting mail in the box. So let me introduce you just in case people don't know. David is the president of Branch 3 in Buffalo and Western New York. He is also the co-chair of the Concerned Letter Carriers, a reform movement within the post office that will be putting up candidates in the upcoming election, including David, who is a candidate for trustee on the CLC ticket. So the reason I have David here today is because I saw on social media a couple days ago that he made a post. By the way, you guys should follow David Grosskopf on social media. He puts out great information, and there's great information for Branch 3 as well. So he made a post that the Office of the Inspector General is surveilling carriers who are suspected of tampering with their scanners. And carriers are being fired for this, or at least for now put on emergency placement pending being fired. David, what are these carriers doing to their scanners?
The initial reports that I saw, this was coming out of the Boston area. And, you know, unfortunately, the OIG is alleging that carriers are removing the battery from their scanners so the scanner doesn't work at all. They're using a thing called a Faraday bag. For those of you that don't know what that is, it's basically a bag. And when you drop, for example, a signal device like your cell phone or that scanner in that bag, it does not allow the signal to get out of the bag, rendering, you know, the mechanism useless, whether that's your scanner again or your cell phone. Doing things such as wrapping scanners in tinfoil again to block that GPS signal. And again, I mean, I just want to be clear from the beginning. These are things as letter carriers that we should not be doing. We should not be tampering, you know, with those scanners, whether that's, you know, on purpose or not. You know, if you have an issue with that tool working properly, take that tool to management and ask them to provide you with a different tool. It's really that simple.
Yeah, that is definitely correct. So I would talk about this in the academy as well, that it's tempting to, I'm gonna run along on my lunch, and so I want to take the battery out of the scanner. But the scanner logs that kind of activity. It'll keep a log of when the battery was taken out, when the battery was put back in. And all these things do is make management suspicious. So go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean, again, I can understand, you know, being a president of a big branch, you know, I get the complaints, you know, the tool's garbage, right? The battery doesn't last long enough. And carriers are right in a lot of circumstances. If that's the problem you're having, you know, make sure that you're bringing that to management's attention, you know, make sure you're tracking that somehow. Because again, if you begin to show a pattern, kind of like failing to be regular in attendance, right? If you're taking that battery out on a regular interval and times aren't showing up, expect management to say something, or in this case, maybe even the OIG to show up and begin surveilling you covertly, and you're going to have no idea they're there.
Yeah, let's talk about that. What is, first of all, explain to the listeners, what is the OIG and then what they're doing as part of this process?
Right. Office of the Inspector General is what that stands for. And again, they are a law enforcement arm of the federal government that are responsible for a number of different activities. And, you know, again, fraud and abuse in different government agencies is one of the things that falls under their purview. And in this case, you know, I've been doing this a long time. The OIG is, you know, surveilled, for example, injured letter carriers, trying to get them on camera, doing things inconsistent with their medical restrictions and things like that. This is the first, though, I have ever seen the OIG in my 30 years coming out, you know, basically watching you over one of the tools that you use.
Right. So when management comes out to watch you, what is management supposed to do when they come out to observe you on the street?
management is not supposed to covertly, you know, watch you out on the street. You know, they should be making themselves known. You know, they should be filling out, even if they are watching you, for example, they should be filling out certain forms. And again, marking anything down that you're doing correctly, marking anything that you're doing incorrectly, and then returning that form, you know, to you. So, you know, what you did right and what, and, you know, in anything that you did wrong, right? So you can correct that behavior before management, for example, goes into the disciplinary procedure.
Right. So when the Office of the Inspector General comes out, do they have to follow those same rules?
Absolutely not. Completely different federal agency, law enforcement agency. They do not have to tell you they are out there. And the overwhelming majority of times, I'll tell you right now, they've got some really cool James Bond stuff. You are not going to know that they are there until it's too late. Normally, I handle a lot of the interviews that are done with either the inspection service and or the OIG in my own branch, because it's law enforcement and because you, as a union representative, you have to be very careful. You know, when you are dealing with a law enforcement agency or evidence provided from a law enforcement agency. So I'm always telling, you know, my carriers, when we go in that room, even if you've done something wrong, tell the truth. They already have the answer. That's why they're holding the interview. They've already got the, you know, audio. They've already got the video. They've already got what they believe they're looking for of any alleged rule, you know, in the Postal Service and or law that you may have broken. Do not lie. That is the worst thing, obviously, that you could do in any investigation.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. You know, in many cases, management, they don't even know the rules that they're trying to enforce. But with law enforcement, yeah, they've got you dead to rights. So if law enforcement approaches a carrier, obviously, when you get to the interview, your advice is don't lie. And that's excellent advice. Right off the bat, what should a carrier do if they find themselves in this situation where the OIG or the postal inspectors want to talk to them?
In both cases, whether management wants to bring you in for an interview or whether a law enforcement agency, whether that is the OIG of the United States Postal Inspection Service, want to interview you, you Weingarten up immediately. You do not say a word until that union representative is right next to you. Plain and simple, it's the same in both scenarios.
Right. Nothing good can happen if you start talking without your union rep there.
100%. There's nobody there recording your side of the story. And I, unlike management, I promise you that the United States Postal Inspection Service or the Office of Inspector General will have two agents in that room. So that would mean there are two of them and there are one of you. And how do you think that's going to go when the carrier says, well, I never said that?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you mentioned in your Facebook post that these charges, the charges of like tampering with the scanner that the OIG is investigating, are very hard for the union to defend. And obviously we're seeing part of it here. It's like they've got you on surveillance. But what is it about these charges in particular that makes it so tough for the union?
Again, the rules are different, right? They don't have to announce themselves. We don't know they're out there. And again, there's legalities involved. And I just want to back up for a second.
Please.
Alan, as far as the interviews go. So if you are approached, you know, by the Office of the Inspector General, you have, again, the right to, quote, steward up, to invoke your Weingarten right. When that happens, okay, you basically have one of three options when you're dealing with the OIG. And the law requires them to give you either a Garrity warning, a Calkins warning, or a Miranda warning. And I know most of the people probably listening might not be aware of either the three of those things. Some of them might be aware of Miranda, which is your right to remain silent. You know, you got the right to an attorney. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. But Garrity and Calkins are a little bit of a different animal, and most folks and some union representatives aren't aware of what those warnings are. Like, for example, if you're pulled in that room, the OIG may ask you to sign a Garrity warning. And a Garrity warning doesn't afford or it does afford the letter carrier the right to remain silent, which you have a constitutional right to do. But it also allows federal law enforcement officers to use the statements provided by you in both administrative and criminal proceedings. So if you are ever given a Garrity warning and read any warning you are ever given at any time by law enforcement thoroughly, but our advice from the NALC standpoint is if you are ever faced with a situation where a Garrity warning is presented to you and or you sign for it, the steward and or branch officer should stop that interview immediately and advise the employee that they should seek legal representation. Because anything they say can and will be used against them in a court of law. And under Garrity, they have the right to prosecute you in a court of law. Now, Calkins is a little different, or some people call it Calkins. That warning explains that the carrier is required to make statements and cooperate, and it could lead to disciplinary action or discharge. So in Calkins, unlike Garrity, you don't have the fear of being criminally prosecuted. So what I always tell my stewards is you've got a Garrity warning and a Calkins warning when you're in there with law enforcement. If the Calkins, just think of the word kinder. It's the gentler of the two things, meaning anything you disclose in there under Calkins, all they're going to use is administrative action against you. If it's Garrity, there is a possibility you could be criminally prosecuted. And like I just said, stop that interview, get a legal, you know, counsel in there to represent you, because the last thing you want to do is say something that you could be criminally prosecuted for, number one, and number two, possibly, you know, spend some jail time depending on what you've done, you know, and what your record is.
Right. I would hope that these carriers tampering with their scanners would only rise to the level of Calkins, that it would just be penalties within the post office. But as you've said, this could be including removal.
Correct. I could see, for example, you know, and again, I don't like to, you know, talk too out loud about this stuff, but I could see, for example, law enforcement taking the tact that somehow you're tampering with official government records.
That's what it says right as soon as you log onto the scanner.
Correct. Correct. That's why I'm bringing this up. Is they're going to take that and they're going to say, well, when that carrier pulls a scanner from the docking bay and that warning pops up, that's exactly what it says on there, that if you tamper with, you know, in any way, shape, or form, you know, the use of this scanner, you could be criminally prosecuted. And they'd be, well, obviously within their rights to do that. So it's the risk is certainly not worth the reward, in my opinion, in this case.
All right, so let's talk about the reward. Let's acknowledge the reality of why carriers are putting their scanner into a Faraday bag. All right, it's got to be they're trying to extend their lunch, they're going somewhere off their route, you know, something like that, something that they don't want management to know what they're up to. And management has this culture of trying to get you for every minute. You know, we hear about they're going after carriers for stationary events that are 1 minute, 2 minutes, and giving carriers a hard time. And so carriers are like trying to cover their tracks. So what's your advice to carriers in that regard? You know, which is the worst of the two options?
Yeah, well, my advice is knock it off. Okay.
There you go.
We're professional letter carriers. We're unionized letter carriers, and you need to take this job seriously because it is a career. The reason that, you know, we are the most trusted, you know, federal agency is because we take our job seriously, because we go out there and deliver professionally and safely every day for the American public. And, you know, any carrier that is intentionally doing that, in my opinion, you're going to get what's coming to you if they catch you.
Yeah, there were a lot of responses like that on your post of people saying, hey, if these carriers are, you know, going for a half hour, going home for lunch, or they're, you know, doing these inappropriate things, they should get busted for that.
And now remember this, Alan, and they're absolutely correct. But now remember, there's two arguments here. There's the merit, right, of did I violate a rule? Did I violate the law? And that's one argument. The second argument is the remedy and or the penalty phase.
Right.
of that. And, you know, and being a contract guy myself, now listen, if, you know, if I take the battery out, even, you know, whatever, one time intentionally, and they catch me, as a union representative, do I believe that rises to the level of a removal? Absolutely not. Yeah, you know, so when you're dealing with some of this stuff, there's not a one size fits all. You know, the fact circumstance has to be taken into account. You know, previous, you know, record of the carrier and or, you know, criminal history of the carrier would be taken into account. And there most likely would be some mitigation if they went for the removal. But I could certainly see management, you know, going to that length to basically put a stop to it, that, hey, listen, if you do this and we catch you doing it, we're going to fire you and we're going to force you and your union to fight to get you back in the door. And maybe that'll wake you up and you won't do it anymore type deal thing, right?
Right. Yeah. And this whole issue speaks to you've taken one problem, which is, let's just say, extending your lunch. So instead of 30 minutes, it's 40 minutes. You've taken that problem and now you've added this other much bigger problem on it of trying to hide it. And that makes it intentional. That breaks additional rules. And you've really just compounded this problem. I'll go a step further, David, and say that if, let's say this happens, that you do extend your lunch for 10 minutes, well, the only thing that knows you've extended that lunch is the scanner. And management cannot discipline based on scanner data alone. But if you
Right.
start doing all this other shifty stuff and then the OIG comes in, now you have huge problems that originally were a very small problem that the union can handle fairly readily.
100%. And you know, the other thing you got to remember too, and I tell carriers this all the time, and this goes in this situation, a route adjustment, you know, scenario, don't allow management to pressure you, okay? And this could play into some of the funny business with the scanners, okay? But don't allow them to pressure you. That's not going to be a legitimate reason for you tampering with that scanner. And I tell carriers this all the time. If you're afraid, the reason you're afraid is because you don't understand the system. You don't understand your contract. You don't understand the route adjustment procedure. You don't understand that stuff. Because if you do, I'm fairly confident walking in, they try to pull me in on this stuff, I'm gonna have a smile on my face the whole time, because I know, number one, I'm not doing any of that, okay? And that's where the knowledge is power. I mean, you've talked about this on your podcast a number of times, and so have other people, where, you know, some places will, you know, they'll harbor that information and how to, you know, do things a certain way or properly, and they don't get it out to carriers because the union official wants to remain in their position. That should not be happening at all. We need to educate every carrier out there every single day, and yourself and another bunch of other podcasts, in my opinion, do an absolutely incredible job doing that.
Oh, thanks, Dave. That's really nice. So that empowerment, you can see it play out on workroom floors all around the country, where you see this veteran carrier station who knows the rules, and when management threatens to follow them, that carrier is always like, "Yeah, come on out. You'll see how I do my day." And that's the carrier who has a nice route. They get done in 8 hours every day because they know what they're doing. They know how to follow the rules. And they know that if they're doing the job correctly, the way that we talk about on Classes of Mail and these other podcasts, they don't have to fear management. The job can be nice if you learn the rules and if you do it properly.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the goal here. And that's the exciting thing. And I've talked to this about, you know, whether it's you know, or Corey Walton, or, you know, any of these other podcasts out there, man. I always joke with everybody. They're like, "Dave, how do you know all this stuff? There was no podcast." Right. And I know they can't see me, but
Right.
I tell them, I got, you know, this is was my podcast, was
Right,
my
he's pointing
brain.
to his head, yeah.
I'd have to memorize all this stuff. And, you know, the ability now with the technology, with the things, you know, that you folks do on these podcasts, it not only is incredible, but it helps us out as letter carriers, as NALC officials, and as the union overall. It's an invaluable asset at this point, because like you said, you can put the, you know, you can drop that phone in your pocket. You can, you know, click classes of mail and listen to whatever you got to listen to as you're walking down the street. And, you know, you got all day out there, right?
That's
you know?
It.
So, might as well take some time to educate yourself while you're out there serving the American public.
All right. So speaking of helping carriers, let's now get to one last topic before we get out of here, and that is the concerned letter carriers. So as the number two guy at the CLC, Dave, what's going on with the CLC? Anything to be excited about?
Man, what isn't going on with the CLC?
I know.
We're very, very busy. You know, currently we've got our candidate, James Henry, for president, and Executive Vice President Corey Walton and Vice President Kimitra Lewis. We've been getting them all over the country, meeting with as many carriers as possible, again, to get our platform out there to reform the NALC and the things that, you know, we believe are important, you know, especially from a transparency standpoint. We've got James and Corey and Kimitra, everywhere from, you know, California to Texas to Illinois, you know, you name it, they're all over the place, trying to get that message out there, and show carriers, look, there's a different way to do this. Some of the things that, you know, the establishment has been getting away with for the last 50 years, it's not working. You know, it's not working for a lot of us. The rank and file on the workroom floor is as frustrated as ever, and we need a new direction, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and, you know, badmouth anybody. But listen, if you're going to protect, you know, what's been going on for the last 50 years, I'm going to be honest with you. You're probably going to be a target in this election. Okay. We've got to change things for the better. And currently, I've said this many times, my biggest complaint with NALC headquarters is they're not listening to their local leadership and they're not listening to their rank and file. And that's our entire jobs as leaders in the NALC, is to listen to our membership and do their bidding, not the other way around. So that's what we've been working on, is getting out across the country, educating letter carriers, whether that's, you know, through the podcast that we are connected with in the CLC, folks like yourself. You know, we want every carrier in the nation not to fear going into work every day, number one, and number two, not to fear management. There shouldn't be any fear. We should walk in there every day like we own the place, because we do.
You're damn right. All right. So if people want to support the CLC, obviously flying Corey around the country and Kimitra and James, that all takes money. Running a campaign takes money. How do people donate to the CLC?
We've got a bunch of different ways. If you go to concernedlettercarriers.com, there's a bunch of different ways. You can do Zelle, GoFundMe, PayPal, Cash App. That's kind of the techie way to do it, right? If you're old school, you can send a check or money order to Concerned Letter Carriers, care of Ricardo Guzman, Post Office Box 262-279, San Diego, California, 92196. And again, I'm going to emphasize this, because we are the only reform movement and or establishment movement that is a 501(c), meaning there's complete transparency with our money. When you donate money to the CLC, you will be able to see exactly where it goes, because we have to report that to the state of California. The establishment has never done that. What, you know, they raise tens of thousands of dollars, and you have no idea where that money's going to. With the CLC, you will know where your money is going to.
Nice. Yeah, you guys have a good organization. I really like the way things are run. And I like the ethic that permeates that organization from the top to the bottom. So one last thing, if people want to help the CLC, you know, the people who need the CLC the most are the CCAs, the people near the bottom of the pay chart, the people who are on table two, which is now most carriers. How do those people help the CLC if they don't necessarily have a bunch of money to donate?
Same thing. Go to concernedlettercarriers.com. You can sign up to be an endorser, a supporter, or a volunteer. We don't necessarily need your money. For example, I mean, you could endorse us, which would be a good thing. You could support us, which would be the monetary way, right? Or you could volunteer. Maybe, you know, we've got folks right now that are doing an incredible job, and it's so humbling to watch, you know, different sets of carriers around the country, for example, have a backyard barbecue to raise money because they believe in the CLC and they believe in their message and they believe in our candidates. And, you know, that's just a simple way to help the CLC out. And come election time, again, word of mouth, get the information out there. Let the folks know who's on the CLC ticket. Encourage your fellow carriers in your station, you know, to fill out that ballot when it comes in to vote. And vote, man. I don't care if you're voting for the establishment. I don't care if you're voting for anybody in the reform movement. But for crying out loud, vote. It is your union. You guys and girls should be telling us who you want to represent you at a very high percentage. And, you know, that's the main thing that we'd love to see. We had a record turnout, right, for that tentative agreement. We are hoping to have the largest ever turnout to elect the next set of leaders in the NALC.
You can count me in, David. All right. So thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for going over this important topic with our fellow carriers. And for David Groskopf, I'm Alan Gygax. I will catch you guys next time.